You're listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of June 19th, 2013, and we're talking about the E-Triple.
Some deep cuts for all the Chad Warden fans out there. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast, and my name is Scott Juster.
I'm George Albor.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It's a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And what is more video games than E3, George?
Nothing. I think it's probably E3. It is. E3 is video games.
For better or worse, E3 remains like the fulcrum of the video game year.
Yeah, and in the way that like a really loud and annoying kid gets attention.
So this year, the stars did not align, and I was stuck in the Bay Area during E3. But George,
woe is you, Scott.
Woe is me. E3 is a mad place. But looking back on it, that was a really fun E3 that we went to last year.
Okay. Yeah, I had a good time.
Well, I mean, I think we had a good time because we kind of got to cover it in the way we wanted to do it.
Yes, definitely.
You know, like, but so this year we were, you know, this, like I said, the stars didn't align. So, but George, you were there in the desolate hellscape that is Los Angeles.
It's basically, it's like an apocalyptic wasteland, but everyone still has electricity.
I mean, it's like, you know, speaking of Mad Max, right? We're getting ahead of each other, ahead of ourselves a little bit.
I see what you did there.
People are obsessed with cars. They're bashing each other's heads in with crowbars. Like, so George was down at E3 at the show proper. And, you know, I was following it up here via live streams when I was pretending to work. And, you know, catching up on the evening wrap-up shows and everything. And so we want to do a podcast just about the events and some of the highlights that came to our attention.
Yes, sir.
How should we divide this up? Since, I mean, you were there, so you might have a better idea of the vibe of it overall. You know, we could talk about the press conferences. We could talk about some of the games.
I think we should probably almost certainly talk about the press conferences. Okay. You know, there was like every E3, right? There's a ton of games. There's all sorts of cool stuff to talk about. But, of course, on everyone's mind was the Microsoft-Sony debacle, I guess.
Battle Royale.
Rumble in the Jungle.
Yeah.
I went to all of the conferences except for Sony's, which is a shame because apparently I missed out on the most exciting one.
Yeah. The joy of all the people in there.
It was kind of neat, actually, because I was watching in our hotel room at the time, and if you missed the conferences, Microsoft had theirs, and it was kind of awkward, but they showed a lot of games. And then Sony came up, and they pulled a straight "what Nintendo don't" moment.
Yeah.
And they called Microsoft out for their DRM stuff, and it was crazy.
It was really like the old days of the console wars again. It was very 1990s.
It was kind of amazing, yeah. And it's weird because you could, as you're listening to the press conference, you could tell the crowd just went wild, right? All of these James journalists out there flipped their shit at the idea that, hey, you can sell used games to your friends, or you could trade games really easily. Somebody even came out with a video afterwards that was like, "How to trade games, or how to lend
Adam
games."
Adam Boys and I forget his name, the Sony exec. He has the infectious smile.
Yes, and it was just one guy handing the disc to another guy.
Yeah,
it was really funny, and the crowd went wild, and so there was so much excitement. For me, I thought it was just kind of weird that we were celebrating such a bizarre thing. You know, like we're celebrating the audacious idea that you own what you buy.
Yep. Well, it's interesting because it's almost it was kind of a reaction of relief almost.
Yeah, I think that's apt.
We were standing on the precipice of basically like the end of a not to get too well, okay, let's just fire up the hyperbole
engine.
Yeah. So I mean, we were on the precipice of like a complete and total shift in of like the gaming way of life, right?
Yes.
You know, you can no longer have a physical thing that you can give to someone else to play another thing. Like, you know, we're kind of in the twilight years of that anyway, but like that would have been a momentous occasion if Sony followed suit, because then Nintendo would be like the lone holdout.
Right. Instead, all they had to do was just coast in without doing anything.
Yeah. Jack Tretton's just like chomping on a cigar, like, hey, your kids like this.
I really wish that I could be in a Microsoft meeting room to discuss their sort of PR move over the past few weeks.
Yeah, I think it'd just be I really wish there was a meeting about their PR move, because clearly there is not.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, everyone I was talking to, the general consensus was there are people out there losing their jobs right now.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that could very much be the case. I think it would be amazing to partake in those conversations.
Yeah, just to listen. Like, what? Gosh, what are the conversations?
I mean, there was that, who was it? I think it was Jeff Keighley doing an interview with the Microsoft representative. And he asked him, what do you do if you don't have the internet? And his response was, we have the 360. You just play the 360.
Yep.
So the basic answer is if you don't have the internet, just don't get a next-gen console. Just stay at home. Sorry, this isn't for you.
Yep.
Such a weird response. And I know it's the only logical response, right? What are they going to say? Oh, well, have you thought about trying the PS4? Of course they're not going to say that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, it was such a non-thought-out response.
Yep.
And it felt like they were just shooting themselves in the foot and sounding terrible. And and to come to Keighley's defense, too, he asked him to repeat again. Like, so what you're saying is they should not buy your system at all.
Yeah. I mean, and that's Don Matrick. He's like the head of Microsoft Interactive or whatever they're calling it these days. Like, I mean, that is an executive of a Fortune 500 company. Like, how do you not brief that guy and what to say? You know, like, it's...
Yeah, and we all know what questions are going to be asked. Yeah. Right? They went into this knowing it. And I think they wanted to do some hand-waving and say, look at all of the cool games that are coming out on Xbox One and look at the cool features we have. And for the most part, they are cool games and they are cool features, right? But just that it was too little too late.
Yeah. So talking about the game specifically, was there anything from the Microsoft press conference that jumped out at you?
I called it a long time ago, but their decision to partner with Twitch for their streaming stuff.
Yeah, their silence during this whole lead up was deafening, because it's like, oh, if they're silent, they must have a big Twitch thing set up.
Yeah, exactly. So the moment they announced that, I think everyone saw it coming. You know, I would come to the defense of the Xbox One besides its DRM stuff for a few reasons. And one is, I think that Twitch stream thing is a really cool partnership. Twitch is pretty easy to work with. The barrier to entry is really low. It's not crowded with, I mean, it's crowded with crap. But if you look at Ustream, who's partnering with Sony, it's crowded with even more crap. And if one thing Microsoft has been able to do better than Sony, it's curate their own content. Mm-hmm. So the ability for Microsoft to tie their social features that are already pretty good into a Twitch partnership, I think is a really, that's a high point for me. So I think that was something that I took away from the conference that said, oh, well, you know, it's not all a loss.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like Twitch is where the gamers are in a certain way. Like, if I ever see big esport type stuff, it's most normally on Twitch, that is.
There wasn't a ton of exclusives that felt to me were like, oh, you know, this is totally necessary. You know, Halo being maybe one of them.
Sure.
Titanfall was a sort of a big deal at E3. Everyone really liked Titanfall.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Like, I watched a lot of video and listened to interviews with Wes and Zampella. And, like, to be honest, like, when I first saw that, I was like, I don't know, it looks kind of boring. But the more I watched of it, the more interesting it looks.
Yeah. I'm not sold on it, actually.
Yeah? Well, did it not show well, or did it seem kind of
dull? Yeah, so, all right, well, we'll get into the games a little bit. So Titanfall, if you don't know what it is a first-person shooter slash mech game.
Yeah.
And it stresses high mobility of, I guess, really all of the characters, right? So you've got a character that, with a little bit of a jetpack, you can sort of, like, double jump, you can bounce off walls, and then you could land inside the cockpit of a mech and sort of roam around the battlefield with this huge hulking machine. Mm-hmm. So they really wanted to stress the transition between low scale and large scale combat. Sounds really cool. Trailer looked really good. I went to a viewing session of a live gameplay demo, and I think some really cool features are there, but to me it just doesn't feel like it strays far enough from the norm. I saw the people playing tried several times to do cool wall jumps and clutch moments where they bounce off a wall and then off another wall and then onto the rooftop and then onto a mech, and it didn't work out like 90% of the time. They just couldn't get the jump right. I think it's really hard to have that level of mobility in a first-person perspective.
Yeah.
So I think that's not going to be as cool as it looks. Also, I'm a big fan of mechs, but I like the sort of mechs where they're lumbering. They have to commit to movements because they can only move very slowly or very quickly.
You're from the mech warrior school of mechs.
I am. I am. Yeah. I'm like, you know, I wasn't like Armored Core or Evangelion where like you're tied to a power cord, you know? Yeah. I like severe limitations to my mechs. Mm. But the mechs in this game feel like they're just very large humans. They move real quickly. The UI is fundamentally the same. They have some of the similar maneuvers.
Yeah.
So watching them play it out just sort of felt like, okay, well, now you're just a large human and you're still playing a regular shooter.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't as sold on it. I mean, I think it looks pretty cool. It certainly looks pretty, but I think that the actual gameplay of it, I think the jury's still out on that.
Hmm. I'll be interested to see because, you know, this is... You know, the Call of Duty guys, you know, this is their first game since, you know, the acrimonious split with Activision and with Infinity Ward.
A Titanfall was announced at the Microsoft press conference as, like, the sort of big deal. But it's not an Xbox One exclusive. I think it is PC exclusive in terms of the console, but yeah, PC as well. Yeah. So I think if you're into this type of game, you know, PC is a perfectly reasonable answer to it.
Yeah. All right. What other Microsoft stuff? How about the 7 racing games that they showed?
You know, I decided that this year I'm going to try a racing game. I'm going to try to be good at it.
Like, how about Forza? I would probably do Forza?
I think that's what I'm going to do, yeah. Okay. One of my coworkers is really into racing, and he's very much into car games in particular, and cars in real life. And Forza is his cup of tea. So, you know, if the pro plays Forza, then I got to play Forza.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it seems like it is the go-to. It is the Gran Turismo of this era, you know? Which, isn't, you know, it's too bad because
they're still making games?
Oh yeah, they're still working on a new Gran Turismo, but like, I mean, remember how big Gran Turismo was when you had your like PlayStation 2? Like, I mean, you know, that was the racing game, and it's kind of, you know, I feel like Forza has kind of it's kind of taken that lead.
Forza. Yeah, that's awkward.
They were pushing a lot of cloud-based they were throwing around the word cloud with reckless abandon.
Oh yeah.
I'm not exactly sure if anyone really knows what cloud means these days, but they were like really leaning heavily on the idea that they're doing kind of computations in data centers, and they're going to, you know, have your stats going even when you're not playing and so on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what any of that stuff looks like, and especially tied to a racing game, I don't know. What am I supposed to say?
Well, it's hard to know if that stuff is all that new or not, because they've done things like that in other games before, where they kind of try to simulate people's behaviors and aggregate how they would react to certain situations for AI plans. Exactly. So it's not exactly a new thing, but maybe the sophistication is, you know, greater than it once was.
Yep.
Any other Microsoft stuff? That LeBron James thing seemed like a nightmare. Was that in the EA or Microsoft one? I forget which.
Oh gosh, I don't remember. You know what was weird too is that the EA one, there was the MMA guy. Did you watch that conference?
Yes, I did.
It was really weird. Like, he was really in people's face.
Yeah, he was. Well, he said MMA.
I know, right? And like the guy speaking, and it's like, wow, no wonder they want this guy to be a spokesperson. He just like is angry all the time. And makes this grand claim that the first sport ever was fighting.
Yeah.
All right. I guess. I mean, depends how you define sport. Sure.
Just don't hit me.
Yeah.
Let's see. So, you know, there's a fair amount of sports stuff they did. You know, they talked about, Madden and FIFA was there. Yeah.
Ubisoft and EA, I think, had pretty good showings. Also covered that. So.
Yeah. Jumping to the Ubisoft and EA things for a minute. It was really shocking to see the technical problems on stage this year.
Yeah, there was that moment when they were demoing Assassin's Creed Black Flag where it just stopped. Crashed. It just froze.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, guess we're skipping this part.
Yeah.
Stage lights came on and they moved on.
Yeah, that's rough. That also happened during the Battlefield thing, I think, as well. There was a few.
Well, I played Battlefield 4 like in a big group, and my computer froze, and at least 8 other people within the vicinity of me, I saw their computer freeze.
Yeah.
On it as well. And I mean, that was maybe like 30 people in my vicinity, so 1 out of 3 crashed on it. So that was kind of surprising too, because that's one of your first experiences with the game, right? Like, you're hands-on, I'm going to play Battlefield 4, it's going to be awesome. Oh, doesn't work.
Yeah, and also the, I think there was also some cleverness happening on the live stream. I could tell they were kind of cutting in and out of different feeds of the game, because I think there were some problems with Bungie's game too. Like, there seemed to be some juddering and some stuttering.
Yeah.
During the gameplay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for Destiny.
Yeah. Yeah, and as far as I know, a lot of them weren't even playing on the Xbox One, right? They were playing their PC version. Certainly, the Battlefield 4 gameplay session on the show floor was using PCs.
Yeah, yeah, which isn't necessarily surprising. I mean, they've just been developing for, like, high-end PCs for the last 2 years right. before they could actually, like, get the dev kits or whatever. But, I mean, it does speak to a larger trend in how this generation is working compared to previous generations with, like, how mm-hmm. PCs are, you know, they're a more important platform again for everyone since there was such a long console cycle.
Yeah, and,
you
absolutely.
Know, when developers wanted to really push the technical limits, you know, the PC was where they wanted to do it. So they're still kind of focused in that area, which I find pretty fascinating.
Yeah, and then, you know, there was a time where, and especially now, right, building your own PC is actually not that difficult. You did it yourself as well, yep. right? So yep. I think there are a lot of people who, you know, they own a 360, they own a PS3, but they also decided, oh, you know what, there's all these cool games. They are, they look extra shiny on a PC. It's been a while. I can afford one. Let's yeah. do it. And they build their own PC, and now they're looking at what they have to offer, and, you know, maybe I'll just stick around with the PC for a while. There's no rush.
Yeah, especially when there's going to be, like, all these split-gen games where, like, you know Modern Warfare is going to show up on the current consoles and the next-gen consoles, and it's probably going to be the case for at least the next, like, you know, 6 to 8 months after the consoles come out. Like, you can't afford to leave behind that amount of users, so,
yeah.
you know, your PC, even your middle-of-the-road PC is probably going to be pretty good for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I mean, during E3, I wrote up a quick post that I was basically saying this is a year for me where I'm very much likely to be focusing on the PC instead of,
yep.
you know, hopping to get one of the consoles. And while, you know, we sort of do it for a living, so, we'll have to get the consoles right. eventually, it's yeah. definitely alluring to know that, okay, well, I can just stay with the PC. And with Steam's big screen thing,
mm-hmm. yep.
right, and controller support, there's really yep. not that much of a concern that I'm not going to be able to recreate that same console experience at home on the couch just on my PC.
Yeah.
One response to that post that made some good claims from Grayson was that, well, no one's really talking about the Wii U. And I think
yeah.
I kind of agree after he mentioned that it makes a lot of sense. The Wii U does things that other consoles can't do.
Yep.
And while there are a lot of games, or rather there are not a lot of games that really exemplify the capabilities of the Wii U, especially that tablet, mm-hmm. it does things that, you know, my PC can't. And so
Nintendo
I think
do what your PC can't, George.
That's exactly right, Scott. But, like, to be honest, one of the most exciting games announced at E3 was Super Smash Brothers.
Oh yeah.
Like that, I think I'm probably going to get a Wii U because of that.
I know. I was talking to my wife about it and also listening to the Idle Thumbs guys say that exact same thing. They were like, I don't want a Wii U, but now that they're going to say Smash Brothers, Super Mario Land, and, like, Mario Kart are coming out, it's like, well, there goes my Wii U. Like,
yeah. right? I mean, and it's like, it's relatively cheap, and we haven't had a Smash Brothers game in so long.
Yeah.
Right? But, like, God, I invested so many hours in that. And
plus,
so,
you could play as the Wii Fitness trainer.
Yeah, I was just watching that trailer today. It looks awesome.
let me ask you a couple more things about Microsoft real quick, just see if you saw anything. Did you see anything additional about Quantum Break?
No, there was a small section. There was a small section, I believe, on the show floor, but I didn't. Other than what they showed, I yeah. didn't see anything new. What they showed was kind of neat, like the way that they play with stasis, time stasis is kind of
yeah.
cool.
But... Mm-hmm. But I mean, their big thing was like the cross media thing. Like, there's gonna be a. It's funny, they're calling it a TV show. But the TV show is, like, shipping on the disc, and it will react based on your in-game decisions. So what it really is an FMV game. You know?
At like, last! Finally!
Yeah, I mean, we've had this sort of thing before. We just called them FMV games, and so it's...
Yeah.
It's very strange to see this kind of cyclical, multimedia nature of things, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's been in the works for a while, right? I mean, Halo 4... has their Forward Unto Dawn short series that's a tie
yeah.
to the game. You can watch
yeah.
You can watch from the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they announced Steven Spielberg is in some way, shape, or form, I don't know, executive producer or some shit
sure.
on like a new Halo TV series.
Sure.
So it makes sense from Microsoft's perspective that they just want to tie all of their TV stuff with the game stuff.
Right, right. Okay.
I mean, I think that was one of the cool things that I did see from them. And I think this is cross-platform. I could be wrong, but this was for The Division. Tom Clancy's The Division.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They had like tablet support that would let players join in a game, a multiplayer game, with their friends. And as their friends were playing a third-person shooter, they could hop in there and be a drone on their tablet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's freaking cool.
Right.
Like, that's a really cool way to integrate tablet support in a way that a lot of the big companies have been talking about doing, but no one ever actually has. And I think this is a really cool example.
Yeah. No, I agree. And that sort of thing that, you know, kind of came out of nowhere, so it was a nice surprise. And seeing a tablet integration that isn't just kind of like a social game add-on that you can grind for points in was very nice to see.
Yeah,
you know, sure. Assuming that all comes to fruition, you know?
Yeah, assuming it all comes to fruition.
Right. So let's see. What else did I want to ask about? Destiny. I wanted to ask about that. I mean, it seemed, yes. I guess kind of like Halo itself. It seems kind of generic, but then...
Ooh, you know, harsh, Scott.
Nah, I mean, you know, there's a robot man and he's shooting aliens. Like, you know, it's...
Sure.
Halo doesn't really start to shine until you really get into it, and so I'm hesitant to, you know, write it off in the same way that I could easily do that. But, you know, just judging by what I saw, it seems like a much more almost a Borderlands style game.
Yes, Borderlands is a very apt analogy to Destiny, at least so far it seems. I for one like the look of Destiny. I think that they do some of the concept work reminds me of some like artwork I've been really into the past. That sort of it combines futures sci-fi stuff with Japanese stuff with Westerns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you get like a robot, sure, but he's also got like a cloak and like you know, what is it called, a gaffy stick or something like that, right? So I like the aesthetic of Destiny. The actual gameplay stuff looks, I mean, it looks pretty good. Unlike Borderlands, though, it's really hard for me to tell and differentiate between the different classes in the game. And I think right now they only have three, like, what is it? Hunter, Warlock, and, I don't know, Titan or Vanguard or some generic word like that.
Right.
So it seems to me like I'm a bit concerned that it'll come off too much like, oh, these are all just different first-person shooter guys as opposed to Borderlands, which I thought did a really good job of differentiating the different classes in the game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is kind of the first go for Bungie for this sort of thing. So, you know, there's probably some, you know, there probably are some growing pains in terms of just, you know, differentiating the classes enough so that it's meaningful, but not so much that it seems like a generic MMO.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, the idea of being able to engage in what I believe to be, you know, a studio that I trust in terms of world building on a large scale like Borderlands could do, I think is really neat. You know, I don't think it's going to feel like an MMO in the sense that you're running around and look, there's a dude over there and he's being a jerk, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they are bringing some of those elements like random large scale world events, things like that, you know, that they're pulling from Guild Wars or Rift or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. That could be cool. I'm excited for Destiny, but it's still super early. Like they showed some gameplay footage, but it's very little, you know, what, fall of next year at the earliest.
Right. And I mean, so much of the game is going to be based on the sort of connectivity and how they, you know, how they structure the world events. And, you know, it's just so hard to demo that sort of thing.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Something that is exciting, though, in terms of like this new console generation of always on, or the line between playing online and playing offline is kind of blurry. Like it's, you know, we've seen hints and pieces of this with games like Dark Souls, but it's really going to be, it feels like it's really going to be realized this next time around.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, and Dark Souls 2 is coming out, so everyone's excited for that.
Yeah, which is still the most, you know, in a good way, but still the most surprising thing ever. Like that a game like Demon Souls could even spawn a sequel, and that a game like Dark Souls could even spawn a direct sequel, you know?
Right, it's super bizarre. Can I tell you a little anecdote about Dark Souls 2 that I think you'd like?
Yes, do it.
So I'm not a big Dark Souls fan, but there's this really cool, speaking of connectivity, there's another really cool element that they do. And so there's a moment in the gameplay demo that they were doing where you're fighting a boss, and the boss has a shield, and it's a mirror shield. Have you seen this?
I have not.
Okay, so there's a shield, and in the shield, it's a mirror, right? And in the mirror, you can see a dude, a person, like with a weapon, slamming against the glass, trying to get out from the mirror, right? And then while you're playing this boss, the guy that's in the mirror will occasionally shatter the mirror, walk out, and then you'll have to fight him. So if you invade, I guess the deal is if you invade this world while someone is fighting the boss and kill that person, you can be inside the mirror for other players.
Oh my goodness.
And isn't that brilliant? It's so cool. I'm never going to play that game, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's the exact type of thing that is exciting about this. You know, it's not your general PvP, but like it's, yeah, that's great.
Mirror dudes.
Mirror. Speaking of mirrors.
Mirror's Edge 2.
How do you like that Mirror's Edge 2? It's kind of, I mean, it's basically a CG trailer or whatever it is, but it's still finally exciting that they're talking about it.
All of the games that I've, like, no joke, the games that I'm truly most excited about are games that had no, I mean, weren't playable at all. Smash Brothers, Mirror's Edge 2, Star Wars Battlefront.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting E3 in that we get to see the consoles themselves, but we won't really get to see what they do until, like, the next E3, you know?
Yeah. I did play a bit of The Killer is Dead, or Killer is Dead.
Oh, yeah. How is that?
Suda 51's a game? It's a Suda 51 game.
I'm excited. I like his games. I like his games.
There's a mini game where to get your blood flowing, you take pictures of a woman's like crotch and breasts when she's not looking at you. It's really weird.
That's Suda. I mean, you know, this is the same guy who, to charge up your sword in No More Heroes, you had to like jerk the Wii remote around and your on-screen avatar looked like he was masturbating.
Talking about gamers, or rather talk about game designers who get to make games that like it doesn't make any sense. Why do people keep throwing money at Suda 51?
Well, I mean, the real reason is I don't think his games are that expensive.
Like, yes, that is compared definitely
to like
reason.
You know, the big like compared to something like Watch Dogs, I think he gets off pretty cheap.
Yeah, for sure.
Speaking of which, did they show anything more? I don't know. People are super psyched about Watch Dogs. I'm not into it yet.
Turn phones off, Scott.
I don't know. It really seems like it's just a fancier Assassin's Creed. You know, which is kind of a jerky thing to say.
I mean,
but
I didn't go check out the Watchdog booth. Ubisoft had a really, just has a bad booth design, so I never got a chance to get my hands on it or do anything special with Watchdogs. What someone did point out, though, is isn't it weird that Ubisoft's so obsessed with conspiracy theories? Like Assassin's Creed, Watchdogs, what are the other ones?
The new Tom Clancy one.
Yeah, Tom Clancy's The Division. All of them are about like surveillance, government bureau. Like, it's weird.
The funny thing is, I watched an interview that someone did with, I forget his name right now. He's the main guy who's on Watch Dogs, their spokesperson. And they were asking them, hey, you know, so what about The Division? It's kind of a very, very similar story. And he said that, well, you know how he kept Watch Dogs secret? We didn't tell anyone about it. And that's the same thing they did with The Division. I didn't know about it until today.
Oh, womp womp.
So the conspiracies, like, go inside of Ubisoft.
That's what it is. Like, this is all their way of, like, getting out of the Ubisoft bureaucracy that they loathe.
Yeah, it was very, very odd.
That is really funny.
Okay, what else? What else do we need to talk about? Oh, you know, we should talk a little bit about the Sony press conference. Just the kind of the vibe of the Sony press conference was they don't do as much of the transmedia stuff. They don't talk about, you know, they had that one really awkward segment where like the Sony Pictures guy came out for like 5 minutes.
That's so weird too, because Sony has all of these ties to the entertainment industry, yet they failed to capitalize on that aspect of their larger corporation for years. Yep. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, I wonder how much, you know, you get to be a corporation of that magnitude and it's like you're separate companies basically, and I wonder if there's even some like kind of weird antitrust fear in them that if they were to kind of do that sort of thing that the government would start looking at them. I don't know, that's just kind of idle speculation.
It's just kind of weird that the announcement was that it was a vague announcement that they were partnering with themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and also it's like on this same box, you're going to be taking away from Sony Pictures directly by like watching Netflix and Hulu instead of buying movies from them.
Right? Yeah, it's so bizarre. And meanwhile, Microsoft is like, check it out. You could check your fantasy football scores while you're watching a Game of Thrones.
Yeah, yeah. Much, much more integrated. But, you know, maybe that's the luxury of just being a software company instead of like a media company.
Yeah, that could be very true.
But I mean, overall though, like the Sony is really doubling down, it feels like, on this, like, hey, we're a traditional game company. Here are some traditional ass video games. Like,
and the fact that they had that section devoted to indie games as well, I think was rightfully inspiring to a lot of people.
that was such a coup. Like, well, they were just like, not only are we going to announce them, like, we're going to, like, show the human face of these independents, you know, have that crazy, like, half circle. There was, like, what, 9 or 10 independents all on stage at the same time. Yeah. Like,
the Clay was up there with Don't Starve, and, like, it was so weird. Like, I was so shocked to see that. And given it was only, what, 3 to 5 seconds each, but it was impressive.
Well, like, saying their name, saying the title, like, even weird shit, like Octodad, like, what is that even doing on the stage? Like,
Octodad is so cool, and it's just, yeah, how bizarre.
It's really, like, the beating that Sony took over the past generation seems to have really come out, you know, it seems to have done them some real good this time around, because...
Yeah,
you know, they're focusing on the games, not like, you know, the weird like cell processor and all that strange stuff that was such the focus of the last time around.
Right. You know, it's really fun to be on Reddit like after those conferences, because you just see this sort of like buzzing hive mind and stuff. Yeah. And while there's a lot of people who I think are just going to end up buying a Wii U, it'll be really interesting to see how many people actually put their money where their mouth is and back Sony on this play. Right. I think.
Yep.
I'm just kind of hopeful, because you and I have been talking about how Sony has positioned itself as a supporter of indie games for a while now, and the way that Microsoft has, while they do their Summer of Arcade, is generally a pain in the ass to work with in regards to indie games. So it'll be really interesting to see, you know, if that actually does play out, if they do become a home for that type of thing, and a bit more recognized home, and sort of get that credit. I guess I'm secretly sort of rooting for Sony.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know that, I guess depending on your thoughts and your frame of mind, but like, I was listening to some interviews and some talks with Jonathan Blow, and he had nothing but good things to say about Sony. And it's like, if a guy like Jonathan Blow has nothing but good things to say about you, you're either insane or extremely accommodating, you know?
Yeah.
It's weird. Like, unless they're really harsh and people are really towing the party line, all of these independents are like, Sony's been great to work
with.
They're
like a fascist.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you don't say, I'm going to pull all the funding. Like, I mean, but all the indies are saying, yeah, Sony's been good to work with. They check in, and they don't give us any direction about what should be in the game. They just give us dev resources or whatever. And it's like, that's, I couldn't turn down that deal. Like, you know why Transistor is going to be a temporary exclusive to PS3, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of Transistor,
how hard are we going to play that game?
Oh, my God, so hard. It's really funny, because the first 2 days, I'm like, I'm not going to go, Transistor. I know I'm going to play you. I'm not going to do you. You look so beautiful over there, Transistor.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. And then I went, and I played it, and it was stunning. I loved it. I'm going to play so much. It's great.
So I've never had hands-on with it. You want to describe or preview a little bit of how it actually feels?
Well, so if you don't know what Transistor is, it's by Supergiant Games, the makers of Bastion, which you and I chose as one of our favorite... Was it our favorite games of the year it was released? 2011? I mean,
when we do our inevitable, like, games you must play from the past, you know, 7 years or whatever, that's going to be one of the top ones for sure. Yeah,
it's easily within my top 10 favorite games of all time, I think.
Yeah.
And I keep telling people, I think it's damn near perfect. I think it's just a stunning work. And, Transistor, when you're watching it played, you don't necessarily get the whole package. You see this character, Red, sort of zoom around a battle, and there's all these little dots, and you know that it's sort of turn-based, but you don't... It's at least from my perspective, it was sort of hard to know what that means.
Yeah.
When you actually play it, it is just as tight and instantly compelling as Bastion is. Yeah. So you play this character, Red, you know, excellent voice acting, gorgeous world that seems to be inspired by like sci-fi and Klimt paintings. Darren Korb is once again doing the soundtrack, and it's stellar. And the actual gameplay is cool, because it's live action in the sense that you can always move around in the battle, you could always attack things, but it's turn-based in that when you hit the left or right trigger, it pauses battle, and you can move around, and every dot that your character touches, it expends a little bit of energy, and then every ability that you do, which you want to line up in certain ways along the battlefield, also uses that energy. So you get into these situations where you're trying to play strategically by placing yourself at the end of your entire sequence in a good and safe spot to then continue moving forward and buying yourself some time, because you can't spam this turn-based thing constantly, right? But at the same time, you're trying to set yourself up for future movements, predict where those people are going, and land all of your attacks in cool ways that combo into each other. So, you know, there's an ability that fires a laser in one single line, and there's another ability that when it lands, it sends out a bunch of little bombs that do damage in a surrounding area. So I mean, again, instantly, and you'd know this if you know Bastion, right? That all of the different ways that you can combo weapons in Bastion feel so good and so tight. And once again, in Transistor, you're given these four abilities, and within 5 minutes of playing, you're like, this is great. I'm gonna move around. I'm gonna strategize. There's a lot of depth to it, even though it's relatively simple, and it feels real good.
Yeah, it's interesting to see the heritage, because a lot of the Supergiant folks came out of EA, and some of them worked on like Command and Conquer and stuff like that. So like seeing the strategy start to creep in, you know, creep back into their game.
Yeah, for sure.
Anything else from the big folks we didn't cover, or any surprises maybe?
Skylanders continues to print money.
Oh man, that is a money printing machine. Yeah. That's one of the Skylanders, the Golden Goose.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, so I went to the Activision booth, and I think it's really telling that you've got Call of Duty Ghosts on mm-hmm. one side, and Diablo 3 on the Xbox One on the other, and in between right. the Skylanders.
Yeah.
Like, these are titles that everyone in the games industry knows. Everyone. Yep. None yep. of these people play Skylanders, yet it's like right smack dab, huge showing.
Mm-hmm.
And why? It's because it makes so much money. And I was watching a presentation, and they were talking about how, oh, this new set of toys, you can take them apart and mix and match. And so now mm-hmm. that there's some places in the game that you can only access if you combine two different toys, and the whole time I'm just hearing like coins going down the slot machine. It's stunning. Whoever came up with that idea is, you know, either they're rich now or they should be rich.
I mean, it follows in a long line of, you know, kids' toy tie-in stuff. I mean, this is like yep. Transformers, but taken to the next level, you know?
Yeah, Disney Infinity is hopping on board as well, so...
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. Which is, like, mm-hmm. again, like, Disney itself is a license to print money, but, like, then create action figures and a video yeah. game out of it, yeah.
Scott, what did you think of the Metal Gear Solid 5 trailer?
Oh, man, I want to play that game. That's just... that's exactly what I want. I want...
Red Dead Redemption with Solid Snake?
And just a flaming whale just eats a helicopter.
Called on it right now, folks. Flaming whale.
And then Game of the Year 2015 or whatever that's yeah. gonna come out. But like, and then, you know, and of course with a healthy dose of, you know, moralizing and philosophizing in between cutscenes where people are like, you know, joking about how to reload a gun.
Yeah, totally. I thought it was hilarious too, because the trailer, it's just so bombastic. And there's that great scene in the beginning where it's like horse stealth, and you see Snake yeah. sort of climb on the side of his horse, and then it's like real-time weather and all of these things like Red Dead has had for a long time. Like, other people have had these things for a while, yeah. but Metal Gear Solid just takes them and then just makes them so much more operatic.
Yep. Well, and like there's like that whole, well, it is an operatic trailer with like the Garbage, the theme, you know, the song from Garbage the Band, and like, just, I mean, this is, it's too bad that Kojima can never escape Metal Gear, but the more he is driven mad by it, the more interesting the games tend to get.
yeah, seriously.
I'm looking forward to that game a lot.
Yep. Well, let's see.
I mean, we barely talked about Nintendo, but I feel like it's kind of, you know, they play a lot of things safe, but all their stuff, you know, I'm a pretty big Nintendo fan/fanboy, but, you know, the stuff that they showed looks pretty solid. I mean, the interesting like Link to the Past /2D thing looked neat. The Mario stuff looks really nice. Mario Kart.
I played that against someone, and gosh, I brought those blue sparks, man.
The funny thing is, like, once you get good at Mario Kart, I feel like those skills are so transposable to the next Mario Kart.
Oh, they'll never go away. I'm gonna be 95 and be kicking ass at Mario Kart.
Yeah,
and I'm not even that good. Like, I'm sure you'd sweep me.
That sort of stuff is just, it looks really nice, and you could see that they're really getting a handle finally on like, I mean, it's funny, Nintendo's still kind of stumbling over like high res games, like getting a sense of like the scale and the cost of making assets that are that expensive to make, because clearly Pikmin isn't even out yet, and we saw that a year ago, you know, like.
Yeah, seriously.
But, I mean, finally, these, like, their production line is finally kind of catching up to where their hardware was, and you're seeing all these interesting things come out, and, you know, and there's still some, like, you know, the 3DS, I feel like, has gotten a lot more compelling in the month, or the year, actually, since last E3. Yeah.
Well, Smash Brothers will be on the 3DS.
Yeah, and they are making that, you know, Animal Crossing came out, they're making the Smash Brothers for it. They're making that new Mario and Luigi Dream Team game, which I think is by the same folks that did like the Lost in Time and or God, yes, what was that called? Yes. God, what were those games called? It was like the Mario and Luigi series, basically, which they were really funny games, actually, like the scripts of them.
It's not Lost in Time?
I mean, there's a few of them. I'm sure that's one of them. Oh, there was one of them that was like Bowser's Inside Story or something, where they went inside of Bowser to like,
yeah,
I don't do.
That's a good game. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and so it's really exciting to see those types of titles coming out. So like, it's kind of like the solid bet, you know?
Yeah, it's so funny. Just, I mean, I'm just thinking back to this show floor too. Like Microsoft, you know, what are they like? Wargaming was their big announcement on Xbox One. And Sony's just like, have all these indie games. And Nintendo's like, oh, have all these, you know, these exciting games that we promised you years ago, but now are finally coming out. Well, next year, maybe.
Right. Yeah. At some point, they will come out.
At some point.
Yeah. All right. So, I mean, I think that's a pretty good overview. I'm sure we'll revisit some of these themes in the past, since it was kind of a big, show, and it's hard to cover everything.
It was a big year. I'm glad it's over. Let's move on, Scott.
Let's move on to E3 2014.
Oh, bleh.
If you folks want to write in with your thoughts or questions, experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And if you want to find us on Steam, since you're not going to be buying any of those new consoles, you can. It's on experiencepoints.net. We also write there Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday evenings is when we update that. And you can leave your reviews for this podcast on iTunes. It really helps us out, find new listeners, all that good stuff.
Yeah, we should just you know, go all transmedia. Twitch.com/exp.net, YouTube.com/exp.net.
Twitter.com/jalbor.
All right, folks. Thanks so much, as always, for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Arrivederci. There's a place you go to, because I